The right to keep and bear arms is enshrined, of course, in the Second Amendment, but the issue is second to none, it seems, in its ability to spark passionate debate. In the wake of the December 14 school shooting that claimed the lives of 20 children and 6 adults in Newtown, Connecticut, gun control and school safety have dominated the national conversation. The president and the vice president, both houses of Congress, governors and state legislators, mayors and local officials, countless special interest groups, they've all gotten in on the discussion. This week, PBS weighed in with After Newtown, 5 days of special programming, including gun-themed installments of NewsHour, Frontline, Washington Week, even Nova. Now, it's our turn. Hi, I'm John Schwanis, and on this edition of Indiana Lawmakers, we'll explore the issue with a panel of Hoosier experts and advocates. Let's start with a legislative update from Brittany Muncy of the StateHouseFile.com, a service of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism.
President Barack Obama and some states are looking toward gun control as a reaction to the deadly shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Connecticut. But there's no such discussion in Indiana, where the state constitution says more clearly that Hoosiers can carry guns. So lawmakers are focusing on other ways to protect students. Senate Bill 1 would give schools $50,000 annual grants to pay for a resource officer and to purchase safety equipment and technology.
We've done a needs assessment. I think there were 1,200 people that were interviewed. So it's parents and teachers, principals, school superintendents, law enforcement, even some of the school resource officers. And what we've identified, and this was before the shootings in Connecticut, so this really recognizes what the needs are out in the schools with the local law enforcement. So they've thought through what they'd really like to see.
I'm sure after the tremendous tragedy that they reevaluated our procedures for allowing visitors in, the procedures for having doors available, unlocked, at the beginning of school, as well as how are we connected with our local agencies.
For Indiana Lawmakers and the StateHouseFile.com, I'm Brittany Muncy.
Back in a moment with our roundtable discussion. Indiana Lawmakers, from the State House to your house.
Purdue Research Park. 4 locations, 200 companies, 4,000 jobs. Purdue Research Park. The idea economy is here.
The Newtown school shooting prompted the White House to declare war on gun violence. Under the rallying cry, "Now is the time," President Barack Obama has been crisscrossing the country, drumming up support for a multifaceted plan he unveiled last month. Among other things, the president wants Congress to close background check loopholes, ban military-style assault weapons and high-capacity magazines, stiffen federal gun trafficking laws, and fund the hiring of additional school resource officers. Although Congress is likely to take up at least some of the administration's proposals, it's becoming increasingly clear that the real battle is going to be fought in state capitals across the country, including Indianapolis. Nationwide, according to Congressional Quarterly, state legislators have introduced more than 2,300 gun-related bills and enacted more than 130 of them since January 1st, barely 7 weeks ago. Joining me for a closer look at gun violence and school safety here in Indiana are Republican Senator Brent Waltz of Greenwood, who describes himself as a card-carrying member of the National Rifle Association and a strong advocate of gun rights. Democratic Senator Greg Taylor of Indianapolis, who in recent years has opposed attempts to ease restrictions on concealed weapons, particularly in places such as libraries, public hospitals, and government meeting rooms. Professor Thomas Stuckey, Director of Criminal Justice and Public Safety Programs in the School of Public and Environmental Affairs at Indiana University, Purdue University at Indianapolis. And Steve Garner, Chief of Police for Indianapolis Public Schools, one of the state's largest school districts with more than 30,000 students, 60 schools, and 65 full-time police officers. And I thank you all for being here to take part in this discussion.
Great to be here.
Thank you.
Why do you think it is that any discussion of gun violence and gun limitations provokes such strong feelings? I mean, it's tough to have a discussion.
It's an emotional issue, and it is very difficult sometimes to have a discussion. It's even more so when some people don't understand, the issue, whether it's the constitutional elements to it, the legal elements to it. Last summer when I was running for re-election, I showed a Democrat member of the General Assembly, who's a friend of mine, actually, and is opposed to the Second Amendment and gun rights, a piece of my campaign literature. And this individual, who I won't mention because I don't want to embarrass this person, said, the Second Amendment, that's the gun one, right? I thought this person was joking. And then I looked at this person and was shocked to learn that there was no joke there. And so, you know, this is a person who is, you know, will go to the floor of their respective chamber and speak very passionately on the issue of gun control. And so before I think we can have a real legitimate conversation about gun rights and the role of safety in our society, we have to actually understand our founding documents and what role they play.
So an education issue as much as anything in your mind.
In many ways.
Well, I mean, it wouldn't take any student of the Constitution much time to buckle down and read the Second Amendment. I think it's 27 words. And if you look at the Indiana Constitution, Article 1, Section 32, which deals with a similar subject, is, I think, even shorter, 17 words. Again, if you look at amount of energy and passion per word, this is a high quotient there.
I think whenever you have anything that has to do with the Constitution, either the Constitution of the United States or the Constitution of the state of Indiana, it's going to be passion behind the discussion. One of the things that I've always felt is that what we need to do is take into consideration the times and the era in which these constitutional amendments were passed. And when you think about that and you put it in perspective, practically do some of those things work? There are many things that we have in the Constitution of the state of Indiana that none of us would ever think would be applicable today. But for some reason, when we talk about rights and the privileges, we talk about gun rights. There's rights to vote. We have passed legislation in this state just hindering the individual's right to vote, but we don't have that type of passionate discussion when it comes to that right. However, when you talk about individuals' rights to carry a handgun, conceal that handgun, and where they can carry them, it just everything.
But again, why would it be more than, say, the right to vote or some other guaranteed right? Right to pray, right to assemble, right? These are all issues that certainly are important, and they do provoke some discussion, but not the same level.
Well, like I said, I think it's your opinion. As an individual who believes that our duty in the state legislature it's to protect those who can't protect themselves. I think it's important to understand that if you want to carry your handgun, I have no problem with individuals and never voted against individuals' rights to carry a handgun. I just think that we need to have stricter rules. When an individual can go to a gun show and get a so-called background check, the individual who's selling the gun has no license to sell the gun, and then an individual can buy it and they walk out. That's dangerous.
And this is where I think one of the disagreements actually that we would have with this. We don't take an oath to just do what we think is right. We take an oath to protect and defend the Constitution. I have every expectation that Senator Taylor feels very passionately on the opposing side of this issue, as I feel passionately protecting our constitutional rights. A lot of this in terms of the questions and the small number of words is the fact the interpretation of these words leaves something to be desired. I'd recommend anyone who would, some of my liberal friends who think that the Constitution's this growing living document and that we just interpret these same words in lots of different ways as time goes by instead of amending the Constitution. If you're going down an interstate and you're going 70 miles an hour, try going down 90 miles an hour. When you get pulled over, just tell the police officer that the speed limit's a living, breathing law, and that the cars are safer than at the time that the original speed limit was drafted, the roads are better, and that you thought it would be a good idea to just interpret the speed limit differently than what it says. And I don't think a cop would buy that as he's writing you the ticket, and I don't think we who are charged with protecting the Constitution of Indiana and the U.S. Would buy that argument either.
Strict constructionist versus living, breathing document. I feel as if we have Antonin Scalia and Stephen Breyer here on the set. I mean, obviously that's an issue that members of the U.S. Supreme Court and judges and lawmakers around the state wrestle with all the time. Professor Stuckey, you study these sorts of things. You watch these debates as they unfold around the country. As I mentioned, it boggles my mind that 2,300 bills have been introduced in the past, less than 2 months. And granted, these are on all sides of the issue, some quote-unquote pro-gun, some anti-gun. I keep going back to this notion of the passion and the rhetoric. I saw this week a lawmaker from suburban St. Louis in Missouri introduced a bill, presumably to make a point, that would criminalize the introduction of gun control legislation. What does that say about the level of discussion in this country on this issue?
Well, excuse me. This is from the standpoint of thinking about this as a public policy issue. It's an incredibly difficult discussion because there are so many moving parts to it. The problem, and I prefer to speak of the problem of gun violence as opposed to gun control, because gun violence is a very complex issue. There are multiple different facets, including things like domestic violence where a gun is present. There are things, mass shootings, which are a very different scenario and require very different public policies to address those. And then you have the very real problem that is unfortunately so common that young, predominantly poor individuals are carrying weapons to protect themselves, either out of a sense of fear or because they're engaged in criminal activity and are shooting each other. And gun violence is related to the issue of gun control in some ways, but it is also very different. And I think the focus on immediately jumping to the question of gun control creates a large degree of heat without much light. People who feel strongly on either side of the issue, as you would expect lawmakers to feel, have enough complex information in front of them to support their views. Well, there's clearly, on the strict constructionist side, there is evidence to support that view, and on the other side of the issue, there's clearly enough language to support that as well. And so what you end up with is, because the constitutional piece of this really comes to some of the core and the crux of our culture in some ways, that it becomes almost impossible. And what's difficult about this as a person who's trying to understand the research from if you can objectively do this, is that generally speaking, people start with the conclusion and then they find evidence to support their position. And there's enough evidence out there to support both positions. And so you end up in a situation where people are really not even speaking to each other about the same things. And that's what makes this such a difficult position.
You raise an interesting point about the terms and semantics. I've seen several things this week, discussions of the very term gun control. Is that a loaded, no pun intended, term, that it somehow has negative baggage associated with it? And I think if you look at, for instance, the speeches that the president has made in this, he never uses, he'll talk about guns, he'll talk about violence, but doesn't necessarily talk about gun control. So maybe that's part of what makes this challenging, is trying to find the right terms to convey the discussion points. Well, you've heard, Chief, from people who make the laws about guns, people who study laws about guns. You're there every day. You and your 65 officers are keeping 30,000 students safe. What's the reality here?
Well, for me, there's reality throughout everything that's already been discussed. You talk about the few short words and the interpretation, and it's not easy. You make an analogy that a police officer wouldn't accept. Your explanation that the traffic laws are a living, breathing document. However, I don't think that I have seen anything with so few words that is so widely interpreted as to the intent, or original intent, current intent. You know, I have a close personal friend who's much an advocate that he has a right to carry a firearm, and I suggest to him that as long as that firearm is in your pocket, in your possession, it's safe. But he's had his gun taken, and I worry as much about things like mental health. That to me is a greater issue to begin with. I don't know of many mass shootings that have been taken at the hands of someone who is anything more than a person suffering from a mental health issue, regardless of what's in their hand and regardless of the level. I've seen the comparisons in other countries that have stricter gun control, and Asian countries that have a larger death rate from edge weapons than they do guns. For me, it isn't. I gotta support anyone's right as a reasonable individual, and that's how laws are written. A reasonable individual interprets this. I'm not sure we understand who that is. I'm not sure we understand who a reasonable person is. Are we on this panel reasonable? Certainly on a day-to-day basis, we've got to be. But I'm not sure that those people who debate this have a perfect understanding of what's out here, in the sense that the lives that our children live currently and they're going to grow up You know, this young man that enacted this horrendous crime in Connecticut recently, whether he has had a perfect understanding of what we're talking about really isn't the issue. His life was clouded by mental health issues. Regardless of what was in his hands, or his mother might have thought he was safe in teaching him gun safety, it didn't work.
Now, presumably, some of the students in IPS, the seniors, are over 18, so theoretically they could have concealed carry permits. Now, they can't carry them in school. I mean, that's a no-no. But again, does that give you pause, or when you think that some of these students who you see carrying their book bags down the school from the cafeteria to their class could be carrying a weapon?
I think that's a real possibility on all of our campuses throughout this nation, that there's a possibility that someone's carrying a weapon of some sort in their book bag. That isn't what gives me pause as much as the pain and suffering that these children are going through, and the lives they have to live is not recognized, in my opinion, at the appropriate level. If we're talking about reasonable individuals, certainly reasonable individuals ought to have the right to carry a firearm and protect themselves and protect other people. That's not what's happening, in my opinion. Those guns are not in the hands of reasonable individuals.
I could address two points there. First, with respect to the mental health issue, it is absolutely the case that there are some individuals, and we have a difficult situation here in that those examples like Newtown are so horrific, and this is in no way to minimize those. But when you talk about the number of people with mental health issues and the number of people who have mental health issues who are potentially dangerous, even professionals have an extreme difficulty identifying of the people who have mental health issues which ones could be dangerous. I hate to use the term needle in a haystack, but it's extremely difficult to identify who of the people who periodically appear to be out of control in some ways would be in a position or would be capable of committing those acts.
So even broader background checks, if I follow what you're saying, might not necessarily pick up somebody's propensity for violence or for...
Well, and this is what makes it difficult, because you could create a situation where you would monitor or change the ability of people to have firearms that have mental health issues. But in terms of being, it's what we call the prediction problem, being able to predict which of these, say, 100,000 people will become the two or three who turn into that Newtown shooter, that's an extremely difficult situation. Now, that's not to say that there aren't reasonable things that we can do, but it's simply untrue that the people that have mental health issues are the people who are committing violence, because that may be one piece of it for this particular problem. But if you look at over 11,000 firearm homicides in 2010, according to the latest CDC figures, and predominantly those were with handguns, predominantly those were individuals that were engaged in a series of activities that are not what we're talking about with respect to the Newtown
shooting. I absolutely see your point, and wouldn't disagree with what you said. You clarify it much better to say that these are very, very isolated situations, and you've done as much study as in that field as I have in the field of mass and serial murderers. I couldn't agree with you more.
For obvious reasons, in the shootings in Newtown and others, schools have been a focal point, as you mentioned, and you, Professor, mentioned with kind of the question, well, what can we do even if we can't identify or predict who might be source of trouble?
Well, let me clarify. I'm not saying that we can't predict there. What I'm saying is
the
that it's not a simple situation to be able to say that if you do X, then you'll have Y. And I think one of the other things that, and this, I'll just say this point and then I'll let others jump in, but I think one of the
lawmakers
problems
don't
that
like
we,
it when the professors talk more than the lawmakers.
One of the problems
that
mind.
They control your funding, but go ahead, Professor.
Well, that's another day's discussion. one of the things that I think that we have to look at here is that, like many complex problems, there are likely to be multifaceted solutions. I like to think of this in terms of things like traffic safety. Traffic safety is not about a specific piece of activities.
Right.
It is a series across a variety of domains. And that's where I think that in the long run we need
to. And Governor Mike Pence has said repeatedly, this is not a matter, let's talk about schools, for instance, of too much access to guns. It's access to schools is his contention. I mean, do you buy that, Senator?
And I think it's appropriate to discuss this gun control issue in that vein. We're not talking about, and I have never said that people don't have a right to carry a firearm. I'm saying that we need to be responsible enough to understand that sometimes those individuals who are carrying the firearms are not those individuals that we ever had the intent to allow to carry a firearm. Consistent background checks, in my opinion, will provide some safety. In addition to that, you can go buy a firearm, get a license, carry a firearm, and never know how to use it. Now, I don't think that our founding fathers ever thought that we would be driving, as Senator Waltz brought up, 100 miles per hour on the street. But we have, as lawmakers, have determined that that car is such a dangerous piece of equipment that we require someone to have at least the basic understandings of how to control that vehicle. Why don't we have the same thing, even though it's a right, for people who carry a firearm? Why don't they have to have the basic understandings of carrying a firearm and the difficulties to either unlock the safety, to shoot it, to clean it?
Well, answer that, and I do want to talk about specifically Senate Bill 1 before
sure.
we run
and
out of time.
And I'd be happy to, because there are hundreds or thousands of items that we deal with every day that could be extremely dangerous. Chainsaws. I've never used a chainsaw in my life. My uncle almost got his leg cut off when I was a little kid. I saw the scars, I saw the stitches, and it absolutely scared me to death. And I've never used a chainsaw. Should we have a license to have a chainsaw if we go to Menards or Walmart to buy one? You can make that argument on dozens, hundreds of items that are perfectly legal that I would argue would be every bit as lethal as a firearm to yourself or to those around you.
Sir,
I don't think that would be
responsible.
Very quickly, because we really are.
Just the difference, in my view, is that chainsaws are not used as weapons against other people on a regular basis. Mm. And so
only
I think our responsibility in terms of public policy
you need to watch more late night movies on the weekend. Real quickly, Senate Bill 1, that's the one bill that hasn't been sent to Rules Committee in the House or Senate, meaning it still has some life. That would be additional funding, perhaps $10 million for school resource officers. You're down that path already. Is that going to make a difference? Do you think if that's funded and enacted?
I do think that it can make a difference. From my perspective, it's a kickstart for some school districts who are probably headed in that direction to begin with and could use the assistance in funding and in waking us up, if you want to put it in that direction, if they haven't chose that as an opportunity, utilizing local law enforcement.
All right.
Well, that's part of the federal legislation. We need to make sure that we understand that part of the federal legislation does provide additional funding for schools to have resource officers. We don't need to look at this in a box. Congress goes along with this, Congress will provide additional funding for resource
officers. Even if they don't, we're going to provide it in the state of Indiana because kids' safety is very important.
All right, I need my referee whistle here. Gentlemen, I appreciate it. We could go on and on. Obviously, passions do run very strong on these issues. I appreciate your insights. Again, my guests have been Republican Senator Brent Waltz of Greenwood, Democratic Senator Greg Taylor of Indianapolis, Thomas Stuckey, a criminal justice professor at IUPUI, and Steve Garner, chief of police for Indianapolis Public Schools. The topic is health care. Our expert panel will shoot from the hip. You'll get that joke on the next Indiana Lawmakers. And time now for our weekly conversation with Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter Indiana Legislative Insight. Ed, aside from the school resource officer funding bill, most everything related to guns has been sent either to Senate rules, House rules, basically where we'll hear from them no more. Why is that?
Well, I think a lot of the members believe that they did everything that they needed to do to expand gun rights and things that were relatively reasonable in the last two sessions. You know, we saw some major expansions of the ability to carry, and there's really not a great appetite to expand things even further at this point.
You know, two bills that did get some attention, again, didn't get a hearing, but one would allow students, college students on public campuses in the state to carry concealed weapons if they had permits, and would bar IU and Purdue and Ball State from saying no to that. The other one would say basically, hey, if we make the guns here, if we make the ammunition here, it's not a federal issue, it's a state issue, 10th Amendment. stay away federal government. Do you think any of those will resonate, not this session, but in the future?
Oh, absolutely. We'll have a big discussion about 10th Amendment issues. I mean, we're having those kinds of talks right now on a macro level. And the guns in the higher education institution bill is kind of being pushed back against by the colleges themselves. They're not real happy with the prospect. We're also seeing a little bit of pushback against some of the legislation that expanded the right to carry in the last 2 years from, for example, the Indiana Chamber of Commerce. So there's some issues with some of those bills that are keeping those things out of the real committee hearings right now.
And will Senate Bill 1, again, that's the school resource officer bill, will it get funded? Right now there's no dollars attached to it. There's a notion of $10 million in grants that would be given out. Does that get funded?
Well, they're still talking about that in the House Committee on Ways and Means. It's still very early in the budget process, and the Attorney General has made this a major priority. So it will certainly be talked about in the next 2 months.
Very good, Ed. Thanks, as always, for your insight.
For more information, episode streams, and extra content, visit us on the web at wfyi.org/lawmakers. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And remember, you can get our show on demand from Xfinity and Bright House Network. Just go to Hoosier TV and look for Indiana Lawmakers under News. Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm John Schwannis, and on behalf of WFYI Public Media, Indiana's other public broadcasting stations, and thestatehousefile.com, I thank you for tuning in and invite you to join us again at the same time next week. Until then, take care.
The idea economy is here at the Purdue Research Park. A powerful economic engine and a technology conduit from Chicago to Louisville. Purdue Research Park, the idea economy is here.